Welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour, where America always comes first.
I'm proud to be an American.
Each week, we bring you captivating guests who will speak on many topics of national interest. We are not interested in telling you what to think or how to think. We have faith that you can do that for yourself. Our interest is to bring you information to help you form your own opinions. As always, the views expressed by our guests are their own and are not necessarily shared by the host or the station you are listening to. Get ready for enlightenment with the Conservative Thought Hour.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Black and Rick Stannard.
Good morning and welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour. I am your host, Rick Stannard, along with Carrie Black, who's on vacation this week. We have a great hour ahead with our guest, Joan Swirsky. Thanks for being here, Joan.
Rick, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
Well, this is going to be great. I'd like to read just a little quick bio so our audience is brought up to speed on who you are and what we're going to be talking about today.
Sure.
Joan is a recipient of numerous Long Island Press awards, wrote health, science, and feature articles for the New York Times Long Island section for over 20 years, as well as for many national and regional publications. A former obstetrical and operating room nurse, Lamaze teacher, and psychotherapist. Wow, what a career. Joan is a book and lyric writer of four musicals, one of which, Oh Baby, about three couples facing parenthood, was produced in New York City in 1983. Joan is also the author, co-author of 12 books. And for the past 35 years, she's been a featured writer on political issues on numerous national and international conservative websites. Joan is married to her high school sweetheart, and they have three children and three grandchildren. Her website, for those of you who want to read what she writes, is www.joanswirsky, that's JoanSwirsky.com. Well, Joan, what a background. Holy mackerel.
Well, I was lucky, Rick, because a lot of the things that I love to do, I could do out of my own home, not go to nursing school. Then I left home, but I didn't do that till my youngest child was in kindergarten. I was about 27, and it took me quite a while to go to nursing school because I was juggling, raising children and making meals and doing laundry and just everything up in the air. So it took me quite a while, but finally I did become a registered nurse, and I did pinch myself every night that I went to work, because for the most part I worked in the delivery room at nights when all the action is and in the days at the operating room. But it's a very beautiful profession, and so especially during this past year and a half of the COVID crisis, it's very touching to me, really, and impressive, the work that the doctors and the nurses have done, like running into the fire rather than away from it. So it's very remarkable.
There are a lot of heroes out there, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
From your background, Joan, it appears that you are a longtime conservative. Were you born into conservatism, or did you come into it after spending some time with the left?
That's so interesting. Actually, my husband and I were born in New Haven, Connecticut, but we became New Yorkers in the middle 60s, and we moved into a community that's probably the most far left community on Long Island. In fact, they even had a Marxist forum here for 40 years until the founders passed away. A Marxist forum, imagine. And so it was really living among liberals that made me into a rock-ribbed conservative. And it started very early. I remember when I moved into my house, my neighbor's children were being sent to the store to buy their mother's lettuce. And I didn't understand. And the neighbor explained to me, because to bring me up to date on what the right behavior was, she explained to me that Cesar Chavez in California the farm workers or whatever he represented, was boycotting. He wanted a boycott of lettuce because he wanted to raise awareness for the union he was representing. So they were sending their children to buy the lettuce and pretending how virtuous they were that they weren't buying the lettuce. And I said, I think that's called hypocrisy. And that's one of many, many examples of what it alienated me. And it came clear to me over a period of years that leftists are driven by emotion. And just the same thing that attracted me to nursing attracted me to conservatism. It's empirical. It's objective. It's fact-based. If you're in there, or anybody's in the hospital and I'm calibrating an IV into which fluid is going into your veins, or I'm drawing up a syringe in which I'm going to put medicine into your system, it's right or it's wrong. It's not how I feel. It's not my instincts. It's not my experience. There's either a right dose or a wrong dose, and the right dose could cure you, and the wrong dose could kill you. And it's the same way with conservatism. This whole cancel culture is really because liberals, leftists, progressives, whatever they're calling themselves, they always have a new name, they can no longer defend their policies and support their policies by anything resembling logic or fact or empiricism. And so what they do, instead of engaging in debate and engaging in conversation, you just cancel the person they're talking to. And you've heard this more and more over the past few years, where whole families have been driven apart because of a difference in political thought, which never existed in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s. People disagreed, but there was more decency, really. And now there's just this guillotine that comes down if you don't agree with the loony left. And I say the loony left because everything I read every day gets crazier and crazier. Now I hear the American Medical Association no longer wants to put the appellation boy or girl on a birth certificate. Because what if we don't have only two genders? What if there's 35, like the left says? These are little smatterings of insanity, but I saw that back in the 60s, living in this very liberal community, and it was very unattractive to me, and it didn't make any sense to me, just the way leftism doesn't make any sense today. Here you have people wagging their fingers for the last year, these sanctimonious finger waggers, saying, keep your distance and wear your mask. And yet we see under the Biden regime, I don't even call it an administration, the Biden regime, literally thousands of people coming across the border testing positive for COVID. And you don't see those finger waggers saying anything, do you? Not one single word, like a thunderous silence. And that's,
you know, if they cared at all about COVID and human health, they'd give those people vaccines at the border before they let them in.
No, because there's a lot of people being put all over the country into hotels and even into cities that we don't know about. It's a very organized thing, and they're not getting, they're testing positive for COVID.
Well, you know,
they're not one peep from the loony left.
Well, the problem we have on the right is our logic. We think that because the left has illogical positions, that they're illogical people. That's not true. They are very logical people, dumb as a box of rocks, but very logical. They want COVID to continue. That's why they're letting all the COVID in the country.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a multi-layered mission. It's not just that for COVID to continue, so they can continue to engage in the lockdowns and the fear tactics. Yeah. And all that stuff. But they also, they want new voters that they can bust to the polls that don't register, because God forbid any voter should be registered, should have an ID. You know, that would offend the sensibilities of all the people who need IDs to do anything in their lives, including drive a car, get an apartment, do anything. No voting IDs, because that would offend their sensibilities. So they want this massive amount of voters, and they want the COVID, as you say, to continue. And they want to amass massive numbers to like the idea of big government. And that's really the ideological difference between conservatives and leftists. They truly, deeply believe that. That's why they hate religion, by the way. That's why they're trying to get rid of organized religion, because they want the belief system of their followers to believe in big government from cradle to grave. We will take care of you. We'll take care of your health care. We'll take care of your housing, take care of your education, take care of your food. We'll be your de facto caregivers. And that's what the left is. And that's what communism is. The state takes care of everything, right, and everybody's miserable. It's so unbelievable when you think about communism and socialism having failed so thunderously wherever it's been practiced in any country on earth. And still, the American left thinks we'll do it better. We're smarter. We'll do it better.
Yeah. What egos.
Mm.
Well, you know, when Hillary came out with her book, It Takes a Village, I wanted to cry, because it doesn't take a village. It takes a family. A mom and a dad.
Well, you touched on a subject that's very near and dear to my heart, because I really have a theory about what happens. I was once asked to give a speech about at my, I think it was my 50th high school graduation. And I told them that we happened to be lucky enough to live in the last great decade of the entire 20th century, because the 60s ushered in, not only was a very tumultuous, difficult decade with the assassination of four major figures, including a U.S. president and the attorney general who was running for president, and Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. But it also ushered in the feminist movement. And essentially, what the feminist movement said was that all you women who are having children and raising them, you're way too smart for that. You're way too clever. You're way too talented. It's much better to go to work in a high-rise building on the 20th floor and sit in a cubicle and look at a computer for 8 hours a day than to raise a child or make a meal. And what they tremendously succeeded in doing was having an entire generation give birth and hand their child to a daycare worker or to a nanny. And a nanny or a daycare worker, they may be competent, they may be well-intentioned, they may do, you know, change the diapers and give the bottles on time, but they're not a mother, they're not a father, they're surrogates. And what you have now are the generations that came out of that mentality. And you have a lot of people who I believe are sociopaths. They have no empathy. They've also been so fixated on their iPhones since the year 2000, or, you know, 2090, the end of the 20th century, that it's a species that's unrecognizable. It's like, I feel like I'm going to the Bronx Zoo sometimes when I talk to a young person. You ever go to the Bronx Zoo?
No, I've never been to the Bronx Zoo.
Well, the Bronx Zoo has a lot of very exotic creatures, and some of them are completely unrecognizable to the normal average person.
Sounds like City Hall.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, Joan, you've been writing for The Gray Lady, the New York Times, for a long time. That you've had to watch an incredible change. That rag is so cringeworthy now, I never buy it anymore.
Well,
not even for the crossword puzzle.
Yes, well, I did the crossword puzzles. I started that in the 60s, and I did them every day of my life faithfully until just a few years ago. I must have just did the expiration date on my brain must have run out. but I really loved, I used to do online even. You can get the puzzle. But the New York Times, by the way, was always a left-wing anti-American newspaper going way, way, way back. But it had some balance. And when I wrote for the Times, I did it primarily because it was a very cool byline to have. And I noticed that when I worked for other newspapers, but when I worked for the Times, if I would call somebody and I would ask them to fax me a document, right while I was still on the phone, it would be coming over the fax because people were so eager to be interviewed and to have whatever story I was writing. And I did a lot of health and science writing for them and other things, feature articles. But it is now devolved. It is so anti-American and it is so far left. It's not fringy. It's way, way to the left. And they lie routinely. And there's one publication, I forgot the name of it, but I get it sometimes, that online, that corrects the lies. Every single day, it's like these broadcasters that go in front of the television camera and they look right at you and they lie. And that's what the New York Times does. And that's why when I hear people quoting it, even the Times says, I think this is the wrong source to quote. This is a dishonest newspaper. And very, very, I mean, I think they should be arrested for sedition. If not.
There are not very many honest newspapers left.
No. It's a dying phenomenon. I don't even know if there's going to be any newspapers in 10 years. And the New York Times, by the way, I wrote for the Long Island section. It was so popular, the newspaper at that time, that New York had surrounding areas, like it had the borough of Brooklyn, New Jersey was a state, Connecticut was a state, Westchester was a county, Long Island was two counties, actually. And they had huge populations. My location alone had 3 million people. And they used to have all these satellite editions because they were like worlds unto themselves. There was so much going on. But then the Times started to lose revenue and started to lose subscribers. And they're still going downhill. They don't tell you that, but they are, because I'm still in touch with one of my former editors who now lives in Las Vegas. And he tells me the inside scoop. You know, they've lost tremendous amount of advertising and tremendous amount of subscribers because people are smart. They know what they're reading and they know what's crooked.
Yep. Well, you've got a particularly wonderful treatment in your writing of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I take it that you aren't particularly fond of either of them. Why is that?
Well, I truly believe they were blights on our political system. I really cannot think of one single solitary thing, positive thing that either of them brought to the political scene. Hillary was just a phony. She got in because of her husband's prominence, not only in Arkansas as the attorney general, then he was the governor of Arkansas. He was the star of the show. She was on his coattails. And the one thing she did when she got into the White House, which was the health care reform, it was a tremendous failure. She did a terrible, terrible job, and it never came to pass. And the other thing about her that's remarkable when you think about it, every single day that I'm aware of, starting in Arkansas, maybe before Arkansas, she was a woman who every single day her husband got up and spit in her face. She was the classic abused woman. You know, she's like the woman that comes into the emergency room with a cigarette burn on her arm and a black eye. And then she goes back to the creep. And that was her. And she did it because if it weren't for Bill Clinton and his essential popularity, he was an amiable guy. I didn't like his politics, but he was amiable. And she was distinctly nice. She was alienating. Two A's, amiable, alienating. And and imperious and preposterous, everything about her. And I always thought to myself, how could she, who doesn't have a backbone, she should have been speaking about abuse. That should have been her, like Betty Ford talked about breast cancer and other women, or she talked about breast cancer and alcoholism. But there are, I think Lady Bird Johnson way back then talked about the beauty of the environment. And just trying to think of Jackie Kennedy, that was way too far back. But all first ladies take a thing, and Hillary Clinton should have been talking, but of course she wasn't, because she was in the middle of this, having been spit in her face every single day. And her continuing in politics as being the Secretary of State under Obama, I've come to the conclusion with a million pieces of evidence that it's a very closed, well, we saw this, Trump exposed the deep state, the real cabal that goes on, and the horse trading and the favors and the fear of being exposed. That's why they say this Governor Cuomo scandal, it was very tricky thing for President Biden to deal with, because Cuomo had the power and still may wield the power to bring down everybody around him, because he knows where the bodies are buried. He's been in politics a long time. His father was very prominent, also a two-term governor of New York. And so I think that's the way politics operates. It's a good old boys network, and now it's a good old girls network too. And I think Hillary, I don't know whether they had something on Obama, where they were horse trading or whatever it was, but she didn't do anything distinguished in all those years as Secretary of State. You can't point to one single solitary thing that makes her stand out as a good example of a politician, or a good example as a female politician. So she's just extremely, use the expression, cringe producing. That's one politician that I find cringe producing. And as far as Obama goes, Obama, I think, was the first Democrat successful coup d'etat. They took this pretty boy who's had this golden tongue. And it's a very interesting phenomenon. You know, when he came onto the scene, there's a, I forgot the name of the guy, but he called 400 of his fellow journalists, and they formed a group called Jurn O List, the O standing for Obama. And they made a pact. You can look this up on any search engine, Jurn, J-O-U-R-N, O List, L-I-S-T. And the pact was that any single time anybody said anything, even remotely, marginally negative about Obama, they would come down on that person like a ton of bricks. They would marginalize them. They would demean them. They would vilify them. They would ruin their lives. They would go to their bosses and say, this guy, person should be fired. And it worked. So he had the media covering for him because he wasn't particularly competent. And I can we point to one single solitary thing that he accomplished? This horrible health care that he ushered in, that's still a colossal flop. This fetish with the global warming, which Al Gore, another lefty, this is a hoax of global warming without one micrometer of science behind it. And I'm just trying to sort of a bit of laundry list of Obama's failures. Yeah,
we could go on for hours. Now, we were talking a bit about political figures. I've read a lot of your articles, and for our audience, you should go to Joan's website, which is www.joansworsky.com, and you can read her articles too. They're spectacular. And you had one about Jill Biden. Now, she's not a well-known political figure, but she certainly has had a lot of influence on our life in the last year and a half. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with her?
Well, you know, I've actually written two articles about her, and both of them are essentially asking what is wrong with Jill Biden. You know, when people take vows for marriage, I believe that, you know, for better or worse, for rich or poor, in sickness and in health, but her continuing, forget about continuing, even when Joe Biden started out on this presidential mission or goal, it was clear to even a casual observer that he had the beginnings, if not a little more advanced, of real clinical dementia. And all of us, young and old, have had people in our families, largely as a result of the population living significantly longer than it used to live. At the turn of the century, people lived 40, 50 years. And now the age group between 90 and 100 is the fastest growing of the population. And I know that because my last book was about caregiving. So I knew a lot of statistics. I found out a lot. And so people are living much longer because of the miracles of modern medicine and antibiotics and refrigerated food and all the things that have added to our longevity. But also, people get the maladies of old age. Joe Biden is not really considered very old in our world today because at 78, there are people skydiving and traveling and playing tennis, but he has diminished significantly over the years. And even when he began this presidential run, it was very clear that he was diminished. And he had trouble articulating, and he still does, and now it's much worse, of course. And we even have medical doctors diagnosing him and predicting that he's going to step down. But here he has this wife who's been propping him up, and it looks to me, visually, it's a visual thing, it looks so cruel to me. It looks almost sadistic to me. To see her trotting out this guy and whispering in his ear and taking over, when people interview him, taking over the answers because he can't quite get the answer out, or he's talking about something totally unrelated. It just seems terrible to me. And that's why I wrote the article, What's Wrong with Jill Biden? Because she should have more character, she should have more compassion, and she should have more intelligence. But there's always a but. God knows if Joe Biden stepped down, if he wouldn't be indicted, when you look at the scandals that he's been involved in, that he's admitted to on camera, bragged about, this whole Ukraine scandal. It's staggering. So that may be one of the motives why she continues to prop him up. And maybe, who knows, if he steps down, they'll say he's incapable of answering any questions and some human compassion will spare him from being indicted. But it's not a pretty picture. And when I see jokes about Joe Biden and this lapse or that gaffe or whatever, I never laugh because it's pitiful. It's really, truly pitiful.
It's elder abuse.
It's elder abuse. You put it perfectly, Rick. That's what it is. Elder abuse.
Well, we say he's diminished, but he was never very good. He was only a minor figure in politics for 40 years.
Yes. Actually, he said 47 years, so almost a half a century. And you're right. And of course, his scandals with copying and plagiarizing, and also Joe Biden, by the way, and I've written about this and documented it exhaustively. He has a long, decades-long reputation as a true racist. His best friend was Senator Byrd, who was the Grand Kleagel of the Ku Klux Klan in the United States Senate. And of course, the patronizing, mortifying things he said about Obama, that he was clean. Oh my God. can't make it up. You can't make it up.
No, and it just points to the failure of the media, because if that was anybody else, they'd have a field day pulling him down.
You're 100% right. And let me tell you something about the media. Do you know, I wrote about this too. I was quoting a very good writer who reported in World Business Daily, I forgot exactly the newspaper, that in 1980, the United States had about 60 media companies. And at the beginning of the 2000s, it was down to six, from 60 to six. And five of them were deeply entrenched in the left. And one of them, which was the Fox News Corporation, run by Rupert Murdoch, was, and he also owned the Wall Street Journal and he owned the New York Post, was firmly conservative. And then just a few years ago, Rupert Murdoch married the gorgeous Jerry Hall. Remember the model Jerry Hall? She used to be married to Mick Jagger.
Yep.
And he stepped way back and he gave the authority over his media empire to his sons, James and Lachlan, who are running the Wall Street Journal now and replacing the conservatives at Fox more and more with leftists. And that's
well, of the two, Lachlan is more conservative. James, it's a far left loony.
Yeah. So that's what we have now. We have, and the reason why, you could ask, it's a legitimate question. Well, why are all these media conglomerates, massive conglomerates with TV stations and radio and print media, why are they all left? And the reason why is because over the years, they've made massive, massive investments in the global economy. They haven't restricted their investment. You're talking about trillions of dollars in the global economy. And it's always about, remember in the movie about Watergate? What was the name? I forgot the name of the movie. About
All the President's Men.
All the President's Men. It was a Follow the Money.
Yep.
Follow the money. And here
we actually interviewed John O'Connor, who was Deep Throat's lawyer.
Oh my God. I wish I heard that. Wow. That must have been fascinating.
It was.
Whoa.
The stories he could tell.
Wow. Oh my God. He did have a couple of books in him. Probably does. But anyway, the thing is, these investments, it's always about follow the money. That's really why they have these investments and are not going to compromise their investments by moving to the middle or moving to the right. And that's why Donald Trump was such a dire, cataclysmic threat to the powers that be in the swamp and in the deep state, which we really didn't know the extent of. He brought out the fake media, he brought out the fake polls. That's why to this day, when I see a poll number, I want to say, where's your sample? What sample are you using? And sure enough, if you actually find out the sample, it's they go to their old reliable question, the people who they know are going to give them the result they want. So it's we don't live in a very an age of integrity, in an age of honesty. It's very hard to know if you're getting the real thing.
Well, back to your topic of the media and the number of left media organizations,
yeah.
I think there's a big specter over all of that, and that's Chinese money.
Yes.
Now, they may or may not own directly shares in these companies, but they certainly could own shares in these companies through a web of hidden companies. And in addition, we know they buy editorial for huge sums of money. They simply put their money into the editor's desk to get what they want covered.
I think you're 100% right. And I think as a matter of fact, I also write a lot about Jews and Israel. And one thing I learned was the huge amount of money that the Arab states and the anti-Israel states have put onto American campuses. They sponsor chairs. They basically control the curriculum because money talks. And that's why on American college campuses, I'm talking about the whole Ivy League and basically most of the major campuses and many of the minor campuses, you have these true anti-Semitic demonstrations with the faculty and the administration in collusion. And why? Because they're not going to sacrifice the huge skyscrapers of money that they get from these foreign countries.
Yeah.
It's shocking, really. It's shocking, yeah, and it's demoralizing.
We're not getting the straight news. You know, I have to tell you, I can say this because I'm Jewish, but when I went to school 50 some odd years ago, I went to Ann Arbor, which in those days was known as Jew U.
Really?
Because there were so many Jewish attendees.
That's funny.
And now the student body supports BDS and supports tearing down Israel. So things have changed drastically.
Well, drastic is the right word because it's almost recognizable. I remember my mother telling me, my mother comes from a large family. I think she has 7 or 8 brothers and a sister. And they lived in New Haven. And her father, it's an interesting story, was originally a farmer from Storrs, Connecticut, who had come over from Russia. And he liked, after he did all his farming, he liked to fool around with chemicals. And he once, he found something, he just mixed something that I think I have something here. He didn't even speak English, but he had a friend and the friend knew a professor at Yale. And he arranged it so that my grandfather with a translator could go to Yale and show this chemistry professor this potion that he had mixed. And he did. He went there. And you know what it was?
What?
Bleach.
Really?
So he became fabulously wealthy and he moved his very big family to New Haven. And a couple of my uncles actually went in the 30s, went to Yale, and one went to Yale Law School. And that was the time that they had quotas against Jews.
Wow.
So it's a very, you know, it's a very serious thing that here, 2021, we see this resurgence of the same, as I called it, the oldest hatred.
Yep, absolutely. Let's get back to a positive thing. You like Donald Trump. You even wrote an article 10 years ago that you titled, Trump is already running the country. What did you see then that Americans voted for in 2016? And as I recall, Trump was pretty much a Democrat in 2011.
Well, Trump, like a lot of moguls, he went both ways. He gave a lot of money to Republicans and he gave a lot of money to Democrats, and they lionized him. Half the people, 3/4 of the people who are now tearing their hair out about him would cut off a limb just to be invited to Mar-a-Lago. They truly lionized him. But the reason, what I saw in him, as I told you, my grandfather, the farmer, was in business, and my father was in business, and my husband is in business. He just recently retired, but it was very clear to me that America is a gigantic corporation, and it needs a business person to run it. All we have in the Democrat Party are lawyers, literally. I think something like 95% of the elected officials who are Democrats are lawyers. And in the Republican Party, you have some doctors, some lawyers, some business people, but not real moguls. You have this massive economy. You have all these competing and urgent issues, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's healthcare, just massive. And it makes perfect sense to have somebody who is a, first of all, who can't be bought, because we know most people can be bought in Washington, D.C., but also who has the real hands-on, real-life experience of a business mogul to run this gigantic ship called the United States of America. And sure enough, when Donald Trump got in, first of all, he called it as he saw it. He said, why is everybody in NATO not paying their fair share? How come we're the piggy bank? And sure enough, they started paying their fair share. He said, why all these treaties that we have, are they so horrible? They're good for the other countries, they're bad for us. And sure enough, he redid it. We have all this conflict in the Middle East. All of a sudden, whoom, the Abraham Accords come, and Saudi Arabia and Yemen and Qatar, all these Arab countries that are so-called sworn enemies are now doing business with Israel. He brought that all the way. Yep. And then what does he do? He slashes the strangulating regulations that Democrats like, cuts the taxes, and we have the highest employment of Blacks and Hispanics and women and youth in the history of our country, and the best economy. And it's so funny, because when people tell me they don't like Trump, I say, I understand. You like high taxes. Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. Oh, I understand. I understand you like a weak military. Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. And all you got to do is run down everything the Democrats stand for and do. Who likes open borders? It's the craziest thing. That's why all the people I see, you have a lock on your house, on your door? Yes. You have locks on your windows? Yes. You have an alarm system? Yes. I say, why? Because there are crazy people out there. They want to rob you. They want to come in. They want to do a home invasion. I said, but you want the open borders? With the fentanyl coming across the border and killing Americans? And the drug lords and the sex traffickers, you like that, right? Oh, I'm not saying that. So this is why you can't talk to Democrats, because they're driven by emotion. They think they're virtuous, but really they're stupid.
Well, I have to tell you, I was fortunate. I was born into a very conservative family. My parents were ultra conservative.
You are lucky.
But the sad thing is that the rest of the family isn't. The rest of the family are lefties. So we have interesting parties and Christmases. And
you
holidays.
Must drive them crazy with your show, because you have the best platform.
Yeah, well, you know, I've got a nephew who likes to spout that Trump is a dictator and a Nazi. And I ask him to explain himself, and he can't. No. So I just smile at him and I say, that's okay. I still love you. So, and I told him that this week on a phone call. So, you know, you just, family always comes first.
Yeah.
Well, you've written a lot over the years about Jews in Israel, including four articles in the past few months. Why does the issue capture your imagination?
Well, I'm Jewish, so of course, and I know the history of
Mazel Tov.
I know the history of Jews, and it's a tragic history, but it's a very also exhilarating history, because although there are 2.3 billion with a B Muslims in the world, and 2.8 billion with a B Christians in the world, there are only 15 million Jews, 7 million in Israel, 7 million in United States, million in Israel, 7 in the United States, and 1 million around the world. We're a very besieged people, even though our contributions are so disproportionate to the rest of humanity, really, in terms of technology.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Why do so many American Jews vote for the left, and especially Biden? I always scratch my head on this question.
If I knew the answer to that, I would win a Nobel Prize, a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
It's true. And especially, as I said, living in this community with all the, there's a lot of Jews in this community. It's a very mysterious thing to me, but I think it's because this species of Jew has traded in Judaism for leftism. It's their new religion.
Yes.
And it makes them feel virtuous to be on, you know, to sound as if, oh, we're the people of compassion. We're the repair the world people. But of course, it's not true, and they don't live that way. They have their alarm systems. Believe me when I tell you, there's such hypocrisy. And that was the first thing that when we started our conversation, that was one of the first things I said to you. It's the sheer hypocrisy of liberals that is such a turnoff to me. You know, the facade of virtue, but really not completely nonsensical and not virtuous at all. And some of them are the most vicious people I've ever met, truly.
All right.
But it is a mystery. It is a mystery.
Yeah, we've got about 2 minutes left, Joan, so I'm going to give you a big topic and let you go with it. And that, of course, is resurgence of COVID-19. And everybody's worried about the Delta variant, but we're already at the Lambda variant, and Lambda is the 11th variant. So, you know, are we in for the long haul of masks and vaccines and lockdowns?
You know, this is a very interesting phenomenon. I've been keeping for a year. I have a document, and every day I add different facts that I learn and different articles that I read by highly credible sources. And I send them to a few journalists who have written widely on this, basically using the sources that I'm giving them. They document everything in their articles. The whole genesis of this COVID-19 thing is fishy to begin with. I now believe let me put it this way. The World Health Organization, WHO, the National Institutes of Health, NIH, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and Dr. Fauci himself, all of them have now been thoroughly, totally, irredeemably discredited. Every single projection they said was wrong. Every single model they used was wrong. Every piece of advice they gave was wrong and contradictory. They're completely not credible. And what we know now is that COVID-19, 97 point something people recover from COVID. The CDC admitted that they inflated the numbers because they wanted to aid and abet. This is science and medicine having been compromised through politics and serving the left. So I don't believe anything they say. And if you read, I can even show you, you know, I'll send you in an email, I'll send you this document. It's very, very shocking. But I
would love to see it.
They're going to try as hard as they can to affect more lockdowns. And truly, I'll tell you just one last thing. In October, before the election, October of 2020, I wrote an article. And I've never done this before. In thousands of articles and 12 books, I've never capitalized a word in a title, but the name of the article was the only, capital O-N-L-Y, the only thing that matters in the 2020 election is voter fraud. And they had it down. They did the mail-in ballots, which are fraudulent, and now all these audits are showing hundreds of thousands of fraudulent ballots. The mail-in thing, that door-to-door thing, ballot harvesting, the dead voters, and they're fighting these audits. You'd think they would be supporting them if they're so sure it was an honest election.
Yeah. All right, well.
If the Republicans are smart enough to take care of that, we'll take back the Congress and we'll start to right the ship of state.
I think you're absolutely right. I am terribly sorry, but we've reached the end of our time limit, Joan.
Well, Rick, a million thanks for your time. I hope I didn't talk too much.